30 seconds. I'm going to call the meeting to order and request a roll call from Stephanie.
Tom Moore. Judy O'Connor. Here. Joe Omoosagie. Elaine Palencia. Here. Kyle Patterson.
Here.
Julian Rappaport.
Here.
Ann Robin. Margaret White. Here. Susan Fowler.
Here.
Okay. Today is a study session. It's the second session of the month in which we are looking at applications from community agencies and using it as an opportunity for board members to serve as primary or secondary reviewers and to reflect on the applications. We have 15 applications to look at tonight. Before we move on to the applications, however, we do have a moment for public participation, citizen input. If we have any, we ask that it be as brief as possible so that we have time for the applications. Is there any public participation tonight? Okay, then I will ask for approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Okay. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? I heard three ayes. A solid group. Okay. We're here. All right. So just to repeat some comments from the last time, because some of you may not have been here last week, we have 36 proposals, of which four are new, and we're at least $250,000 shy of being able to fund all the requests, which is typical. We typically get requests for more money than we have funds to expend. And so it's one of the many reasons for the review process. We'll be looking at the fourth tier today, which is Addendum D, System of Care for Children, Youth, and Families Priority. We've assigned the proposals to two board members, one serving as the primary reviewer and the other serving as a secondary reviewer. And we've allocated about 5 minutes per proposal, with a report by the two reviewers and questions that we will forward to the agency if they have questions for a response by May 4th. So today is an opportunity for us among ourselves to raise questions, clarifications, express concerns. It's not really the time to approve any proposals, even no matter how much we may like a proposal. It's premature to say let's fund it. It's something that will happen in May after we've had staff input and we come back and meet looking at recommendations. The questions that are raised in the discussion this week and last week will be written and provided to the agencies almost within a day. I think that worked last week, day 24 hours, 48 hours?
Well, I think Friday we can get them out.
Okay, by
Friday. We have several appointments tomorrow, so
okay.
Working it in.
The staff have been working incredibly hard to do that. Board members have also submitted questions in advance. And we will be asking the agencies to respond to the questions by May 4th so that we can consider them in advance of any funding decision. I think that's all that I want to say today, except also to thank the representatives of the agencies whose proposals we have in Addendum D for coming tonight and being available to hear our discussion. With that, we have scheduled for review tonight 15 proposals, and we are starting with Champaign County Children's Advocacy Center. I serve as the primary reviewer on that, and we have Judy O'Connor as the secondary reviewer. Okay. The Children's Advocacy Center is in this tier of family of system of care for children, youth, and families. It also could have been in tier one, which is the behavioral health supports for people with justice system involvement. Because the Advocacy Center is a program that responds to allegations of child sexual abuse and serious physical abuse. They use a child forensic interviewer to interviewers to seek additional information from children and families who have reported an incident or more of abuse or sexual abuse, physical or sexual abuse. It provides support to the child and youth and to the non-offending members of the family, involves a series of interviews, a multidisciplinary team meeting, and coordinates work with the judicial system. I did have a number of questions. This is a proposal. This is a program that we have funded over the years. One of my programmatic questions is, why are no measures presented to link assessed needs to addressed needs at the close of the case? So case opens, needs are assessed. It would be very helpful to know how many of the assessed needs, in fact, were addressed by the close of the case in terms of outcomes. And then is the outcome measurement system, which was developed by the National Children's Alliance, which accredits this agency, is it a way to present outcome measures? Is it direct enough to do that? And could it, if so, could it be described in more detail? Let me pause as two more board members join us. Okay. And then I also had just a brief clarification question. The numbers just don't quite add up. When you look at the number of NTPC and TPC cases, so I assume that's an error that can be corrected, fairly minor, but helpful to correct. And a question I think more for staff to consider is, one of the forensic investigators' salary had been supported by the Sandusky funds from the Pennsylvania case, and that that funding has now ended, and therefore there's an increase in the request for funds, and just a question of whether the mental health board should be covering that versus law enforcement. Okay, Judy. Comments from any of the other board members? Yes, Julian.
I just have a question about the plan, the CLC plan, since there's a no on one of these items. I just want to call that to the attention, to their attention, and see if they're, what they're doing about it, or...
So we'll be asking for a response on the CLC plan, yeah, which would be required for the contract to be negotiated also.
We'll add, we can add that to the list of questions.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay. Moving on, then, the next proposal is the Regional Planning Commission's Head Start, Early Head Start, Early Childhood Mental Health Services. And we have Tom Moore and Ann Robin reviewing that proposal.
Hey, I'll read from my notes and also from time to time from the summary. This is the agency is the Champaign County Head Start, and the program is Early Childhood Health Services. The total budget they have is, this is a new program, by the way. Their total budget is $152,395. They're requesting $135,179. This would be about 88% of their budget. And they fit under the priority of system of care for children, youth, and families. And the overall kind of strategy that may also attract us is that it, they serve an underserved population as well as there's a countywide service. The targeted population, of course, is low-income children who are enrolled in Head Start. And they use a screening tool, and they're asking to, they want to fund three new early childhood social-emotional development specialists. And it sounds like, if I'm reading this correctly, that from the screening that they do, they found that they have far more demand that they're able to take care of. So it looks like the number of people that they have served so far is down, but it's only down because they don't have enough help to take care of the demand that's greater than what they had anticipated. Just let me read some of the services that they are intending to deliver. This is children identified by the social-emotional development specialist for services will receive support from the early childhood mental health assistant assigned to serve specific programs, assisting teaching staff and parents in writing individual social-emotional goals, developing with parents and teaching staff an individual success plan for children who exhibit challenging behaviors, offering teachers social and emotional learning strategies, monitoring children's progress and outcomes, and providing information to families and staff. One of the things I was impressed with is the number of services that they're using that parents are included in. So it's not just doing this without parents. So the accessors program is children are eligible for services funded by the by this grant if they score above the cutoff on the age and stages questionnaire, screening, and or the social-emotional development specialist child observations indicating that the child needs additional support. The social-emotional development special identifies children for services funded by the grant. She then assigns the child services to the early childhood mental health assistant. One thing I did want to point out, too, when they're talking about the targeted population that they're going to be working with, they emphasize the importance of preschool as a prevention. And they're saying that preschool plays a role in shrinking the achievement gap as well as slowing the flow of the school-to-prison pipeline. Participation in preschool impacts important quality of life outcomes like maintaining employment, reducing participation in the criminal justice system, and having a savings account. So these are some of the things that they are suggesting are the consequences of early childhood learning. The staff credentials, they have, they want the three childhood specialists. And you know what? I saw what their duties were, but not necessarily what their credentials might be. Were they master's levels? I couldn't remember if I saw that or not. But I think...
Ann says bachelor's.
Say?
I'm pretty sure they said bachelor's is bachelor's minimum.
Bachelor's and yeah. Some of them were LSWs and stuff. Okay. And in terms of the consumer outcome, the Head Start anticipates that at least 90%, let's see, where did I think, they had like over 500 kids that they think that they're going to serve. And anticipated 90% of enrolled children entering kindergarten, including children with a disability, will leave the program ready for kindergarten. The Head Start anticipates that at least 85% of all enrolled children will make age-appropriate progress in social, emotional development. They administer the questionnaire every 6 months after initial screening indicates a need for early childhood mental health services. For an ongoing assessment of children, the Head Start uses teacher strategies, gold outline assessment system.
Tom, we need to turn it over to Ann, unless you've got another, 5 minutes. Great summary.
Well done.
Ann, 5 minutes.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add to that. And I stuck my neck out and said what the credentials are, and I can't find it either. So we'll have to look at that. I don't really have too much to add. That was very excellent. And I think, it, as usual, I find myself in agreement with Tom. I did like the fact that this is real prevention. And I did say that it has to do with the criminal justice system, because these little kids aren't involved in it yet, and maybe they won't be. And the other note that I had is that this kind of support allows teachers to do what they're trained to do, which is teach, rather than try to be social workers in addition to teachers. So if somebody can find the credentials, that would be good. And I had a little note that it would be good for them to count how many families are served.
Any other comments from board members? Margaret.
My comment would be social emotional learning is essential to success in school, because if you don't know how to sit, if you don't know how to listen, you're not able to learn. And also some of the recent research has come out to show that the social emotional learning is key for kids who have experienced trauma. Thanks for the great reviews.
Moving on then, thank you. We'll move on to the Champaign-Urbana Area Project, CU Neighborhood Champions. Margaret and Kyle are the reviewers for that one.
I think I start here. So the project is, I'm going to read some of this and then I have some notes too. It's an approach to research, it's actually implementing research concerning trauma and trauma-informed care. The approach aims to address trauma by building communities' resiliency and strength through culturally relevant public health initiatives. Components are CU neighborhood responders, care teams to train volunteers to support families affected by trauma, and that's and then also neighborhood educators. So the priority is actually includes behavioral health supports for people with justice system involvement, innovative practices, system of care. The overarching priorities are underserved populations, inclusion and anti-stigma, and I have questions on the other ones. So I have a few questions. Staff credentials. I have notes all over the place. The resource leveraging is none. We would be the sole provider of the services. So one of the key components is training. The training is one of the key components, and so my questions would be, what about the individuals who have previously trained for this, because I'm assuming you would utilize them again since a continuation of the program. Also, since it, with resource leveraging and other funders, since it includes a public health initiative, is public health involved in it? And I was questioning, is there an interface? It mentions the CARL program, but an interface with the CARL program that actually goes into homes within the same areas. And then what, I'm such a data person. So there's 30, the only thing that really, the other thing that concerned me is there's more responders than clients in the program. There were 40 clients in 17. Thanks.
Go ahead. Do you have, okay.
Actually, I had one more thing. Oh, I have another note. I've got them all over the place, just in case I have notes all over. Kind of the way my brain works. So they serve 30 people in 17, and it was 64,000, and they anticipate adding 10 more, but the request is
It was 20,000.
I'm sorry, the original one was 20,000 for 30 people, and now the request for 40 people, for 10 more people, is 64,000. So it's an increase of 221%. So financial questions. Thanks.
Other comments from the board? I had one concern, and that is on page 4 of 6, or D22 in our packets, it says the responder efforts started off slower than anticipated. Many of our previously trained responders were not immediately available, and we had to wait until our fall training to recruit a new group of responders. I do remember last year that quite a bit of focus was placed on training neighborhood responders, and would like more information on the retention of the individuals who are trained, particularly since the proposal is requesting three times as much money. And is it, and at this point, if four have been served in the first and second quarter, is it feasible to really anticipate that you'll be able to serve 30, or am I misreading the numbers? And that has to do with page 2.
Actually, I was incorrect. 10 were served in FY17, and then only 4 previously.
Okay, any other comments? All right, moving on then to, excuse me. Another Champaign-Urbana area project, Truce. We have Ann Robin and Margaret White.
I spent quite a bit of time going over this one because I had a hard time understanding it. And discussing with the staff, I think everybody's having some difficulty understanding it, so some more information is probably useful. The goal is to reduce violence in the community. It's a grassroots program coming out of the mostly African-American community and associated with the CU Champions, although it's a little bit hard for me to see exactly, maybe I just don't understand exactly how this is going to work. I don't think they have any other resources in terms of resource leveraging. We're basically the sole support of this. And this is a program that was new 2 years ago, so it does have some track record that we should be able to look at. And I see here that there is something about the parent Communiversity, PCU, which I had questions about because I didn't really know very much about it, so maybe this will be helpful in understanding that. And I have a note here that says serving anywhere from 120 to 175 people, but I'm not sure exactly where those numbers are coming from. So that's about all I have to say. It seems like it's a very good idea, but the implementation of it is a little unclear to me.
A couple comments. I agree it was confusing, but I do think there's some strong points to it, and the parent university is essential. I mean, it's essential to work with the parents when you're working with young children, although then the target population is 15 through 26, but you still have young children involved. My question was, if we're the only funders and you look at, there's a question about if you look at Unit 4's funding in it, there's trauma training included in this grant, and I wondered if that was a part of, could you collaborate with TRUCE, because TRUCE wants to fund trauma training, and so that would be an overlap. So looking at an overlap between what programs are doing and their coordinated efforts, I think would be key. And also, is there an overlap in grants of clients served? Okay. Thanks.
I also had a question, because this is another increase in the level of funding. I would like clarification in the difference between the peacekeepers and the CU neighborhood responder care teams. I suspect that there is a difference, but it's confusing in the way the applications are put together, and I can't tell what they are. If some of them may in fact even be the same people. So the effort to reduce trauma in the neighborhoods, I think, is really important. The goal to respond immediately to shooting incidents is very important, but just more clarification about the relationship between the two projects put forth by the Champaign-Urbana area project. And then also the relationship maybe with First Followers. I'm sorry, the relationship with CU Fresh Start as well, because they all seem to involve the same communities and the same, some similar approaches. Comments from any other of the board members?
I just wondered, I'm sorry, it may just be a, a coincidence, but the total program, oh, never mind. I answered my own question. Never mind.
Okay. All right. Okay, then moving on to Courage Connection. Courage Connection, I serve as the primary, and Judy O'Connor serves as the secondary. We're on page D35 now. So Courage Connection is a program that has been funded for some time, partially funded by the Mental Health Board. Their request has pretty much doubled from the prior year. And we represent a small portion of their funding. The services provided by Courage Connection include information, referral, safety planning, crisis intervention through a 24-hour domestic violence hotline, emergency shelter, transitional housing, individual and family client-centered domestic violence counseling and therapy, and advocacy. And they've also added retail employment training. They also have a children's program, and they have a number of support groups. Essentially, the purpose of the program is to empower clients to regain control of their lives and live independently again. They have identified clear, measurable outcomes. They use a state survey and reporting system to collect their data, and it's completed at least annually. It would be nice to have some of the results for the measures summarized in the application, since they're available. Some of the questions that I had is, Courage Connection is involved in strategic planning, and which is great. When will the strategic planning be completed? And if the outcome of strategic planning reconfigures services, how will this impact the request for funds from the Mental Health Board? Will the agency submit a revised plan? Now, I recognize that much of the funding comes from other sources as well, but the agency was clear that they were engaging in strategic planning, so following up on the impact of that strategic planning on the work proposed in this proposal would be important. And then more rationale for why the funding has increased. Does it relate to new services or to expansion of services? So it looks like the retail employment training is a new service, but it would be, I'm seeing a head shaking, just clarifying that it's not a new service would be helpful. Is the transitional housing for persons re-entering the community from prison? And if so, how many are likely to be served? And is there any coordination between that and other re-entry programs? Does the increase represent the addition of new therapists or client advocates to meet the expanding needs of families in crisis? And if there are other causes, I think clarifying those would be helpful. The proposal does leverage funds. The Mental Health Board funds are only 9.6% of the budget, so they do seek many other sources of funding to do the work that they do. Judy?
That was all I had to add.
Do we have comments from other board members? Yes, Anne.
Well, I just want to give a vote of support for Courage Connection in general. They survived really being in the intensive care unit due to lack of state budgeting and managed to make it through very creative and courageous, talk about Courage Connection, they did it to themselves during the state budget two-year impasse. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly they have a very strong track record of providing excellent quality services. And I personally know people that have gotten their services and benefited and gone on to a very productive lives. So I think it's money well spent.
Okay. And they do leverage for IDHS funds. So, yes. Okay, moving on then to Dream House, Judy O'Connor and Joe.
So speaking about your concerns, in knowing some of this, the population itself, it is doable. Yes, they will be stretched very thin. However, based on the knowledge of this program itself, not just from what I see on paper, but from what I know, it is something that is doable. I know that Parkland is going to be part of it, but also I think from what speaking to Tracy, there is Urbana School District has now been involved, and they're getting more people involved. I mean, the community is going to be part of this way to help keep this program afloat. It's not just these staff members, but a lot of volunteers. I would use Operation Snowball as a way to think about it. Operation Snowball had pretty much only 4 staff, but we saw several hundred students in a given year with a lot of volunteer help. And I think the same of us. Yes.
I just want to comment that even though it's a more than 100% increase, it's still not a very large amount of money. And the amount of bang for the buck that these people are projecting to offer is pretty impressive.
I don't think it's a lot of money either.
My comment would be that it's apparent they will be utilizing a number of programs in existence and then providing transportation key elements of getting kids where they need to be and activities.
Okay. Julian.
So if you just read the proposal, I think the questions raised about how can they do this might be quite apparent. Actually, I'm not sure. Sometimes I think we have a problem with, it's a general comment, small agencies being able to actually carefully reflect what they're doing because they don't have the, they don't have the big administrative staff and the boilerplate kinds of stuff. The reason I'm commenting on this is because I wasn't sure if it was appropriate, but since Joe mentioned what he did, observationally, I visited the one day as a, you know, in the role of board to board looking at places, and there's a lot of volunteers there. There's a bunch of young people running around doing all kinds of stuff with a lot of little kids running around doing all kinds of stuff. And so I had the impression, and it was just an impression, it wasn't a formal analysis, that there's an engagement of many people beyond the people that we see listed here in this proposal. Now, how to reflect that is a bit of an issue that I think we might want to request, but nevertheless, I have a similar understanding to what you do.
And we're past time, but I'd like to throw in one more question, and that is just coordination of effort. Since DREAM is serving boys 5 to 12, and then Don Moyer's Boys and Girls Club picks up with middle school and high school. Is there a coordination between the programs or a plan to coordinate? Because when the children turn 12, what happens? So general question.
And I may be misrepresenting them, but I think they intend to follow these kids as they get older and go through the...
Well, that would be good to get clarified then.
I don't want to speak for the program, right, but that's my impression, and that's part of, so they're adding kids every year, yeah, as the older ones kind of stay with them.
Okay.
Think based on what it's a longitudinal thing, they try to follow the kids pretty much from K through as far as they would go, at least 8th grade.
Then that would be good in terms of a question to the applicant, are they planning a longitudinal follow-up through high school, or do they have a way of handing off youth at a certain point to other programs if they age out?
Okay.
Great, thanks. Okay, and then we move on to Don Moyer's Boys and Girls Club. And the first proposal from them, there are three, is the CU Change, and Julian and Tom have that one.
Okay, so again, I'm going to call attention to the sorry. They're all supported in that $100,000 or slightly more range. So this one asks for $100,000, and it says the total program budget is $128,000. But they're not. This is the same amount they had last year, so they're not requesting an increase. I suppose it's reasonable for me to raise at this point the question. There are several programs, and the Boys Club does all kinds of things, and they're fairly prominent in the community and pretty active. I can't always tell what specifically I should attribute to this program and this $100,000 and these activities. So it's less that I want to question the good work that the Boys Club does overall, and more that if we're giving money for something specific, I guess I just don't know how to nail it down from the application. And it's, so it may be just that I don't understand some of it. So, for example, I believe this calls for 1.8 FTE. And services to, they target 40 high-risk youth in both the school, in the school environment and after school and the summer. And there's a lot of commentary about visiting the schools. I have no idea, though, which schools, how many kids, how many contacts there are in a typical week with how many kids. So I just, it's not that I don't think it's happening, it's just I can't tell. The other sorts of question that I, so, and I don't know how this all works together, I guess, with all the other things they're doing. And so the other thing that is unclear to me, and this again may be, I've tried, let me say, before I get to that, I should probably point out that they say that they served 62 last year, but their target's 40. So I don't know whether that means they're actually intending to serve fewer people, or they just exceed their own ambitions because they take more people who show up. About 88% of those are African American kids. So it's one of the programs in this community that's serving a population of people who don't often get great services. So we should pay attention to that, and I think we probably are paying attention to it. So it's not clear entirely, and the staff pointed out this, that it's not clear how the students are selected for participation, exactly if they're using screening instruments, which instruments are used. So these little details are kind of hard to track. The thing that was a little more concern to me, although I may be jumping the gun on this because I tried to find out from talking to Lynn a little bit about this just before the meeting, and because I may not understand this correctly, but they list a number of very specific outcomes, which is, that's good, outcomes that they expect. But then I don't see any report of how they're accomplishing those outcomes. So it's a blank slate to me. I mean, you could say you're going to do these things, but so if you're going to increase 65% will demonstrate improved social-emotional skills, well, how, and how's it going? So I don't. So I'm not exactly sure how to interpret those ambitions.
Okay.
I think maybe that's all I have time to say. So I said enough.
We're already at. Well, I guess I'm impressed with the idea of this.
Microphone.
Looks like it's on, but then it doesn't look like it's on. Here you go.
That if this Boys and Girls Club, which I know of, serves 88% African Americans, that leaves about, what, 22% or 12%. Non-African Americans, and I don't know other programs. As Julian pointed out, this, the African American community is one that doesn't have those many services, and here is one that looks like they're trying to diversify whoever it is they're serving. And so I think it's a very important strategy for them to try to include other people in this community so we can say, this is a Boys and Girls Club that serves Champaign-Urbana. The other thing is the idea of the outcomes are life skills, behavioral issues, and academic achievement. And I bet that they have ways to tell me how they actually do on how they do it and how it turns out. So those are my major comments.
Any other compelling comments from board members? Okay, then we will move on to the Community Coalition Summer Initiative at the Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club. Anne Elaine, you're the lead.
Okay. Well, this too is part of the system of care for children, youth, and families, kind of what we've been talking about. Mentioning that Dream House Activities targeted the 5 to 12 age, and this, the summer initiatives that are run through the Don Moyers Boys and Girls Club as the administrator, this is a program of the Community Coalition, so they, our money passes through that to a number of programs for youth impacted by emotional and environmental challenges, ages 9 to 18, and they served 879 last year. So of our overarching priorities, certainly the underserved populations, and they do also serve, Champaign-Urbana and Rantoul, and it is part of the coordinated system, and the many subcontracts that are chosen are from the agencies that are part of Community Coalition are the eligible agencies to participate in this. So there are those two parts. There are all of these different agencies, some of which we fund in separately, like Dream House and CU Neighborhood Champions and so on. And one of my questions would be sorting that money out. Do we know how much money goes to each of the 14 or 16 or however many subcontracts? I think it probably, changes. I think it's 14 now. I didn't have that information at all and was curious about it. If we could look at that, if some of the summer programs that were just described in the Dream House application, I have some detail, but, does our money go to those particular programs or some other program? I didn't have the information to sort that out. But the list of things they do includes the arts, athletics, enriching experiences in general, like taking this youth on trips, academics, and so these subcontracted programs expand access to all of those areas, and the overarching priorities that they have include community engagement and youth development and violence prevention. So it's complex with a lot of moving parts, and my question is just about tracking, exactly what our money is doing. I would like to know more about that. If applications divide that up, this is what we get from the Mental Health Board in our regular application, this is what we get through the summer initiatives. And then there was, the staff pointed this out too, I noticed in the in the target numbers, there was a new category, other, that had the number of 1,000, and other wasn't defined. So I don't know, what that's about. I'd like to know that. And I think that's about it. I didn't know, I was curious about what are the requirements that Don Moyer as administrator has for reporting what they do. That would be of interest to me because it's not coming directly to us, but, you know, it's how our money is being spent, and I wondered about that. Susan.
Well, this is a mechanism to ensure that summer programs continued that were started under the coalition to help engage youth and prevent problems during the summer because they were not engaged. And so it's a continuation of that effort and initiative. And I have just two questions. Who at Don Moyer's Boys and Girls Club makes the decision, or is it a committee from the community coalition with Don Moyer's Boys and Girls Club? And what's the criteria for funding the applications? I'm sure that they have them, but it would be helpful just to have details about that.
I believe it said the Executive Committee of Community Coalition is involved in the selection.
Okay,
that's
great.
That's in there somewhere.
All right, missed that. Thank you. Julian?
So because of what I said about the first program that is the Don Moyer's program, I want to say something different about this one in that in the first program, I understand their goals were very specific with regard to social and emotional development and behavior and academics and so on. So I thought there was reasonable to ask very specific questions about outcomes. In this case, I think what you're talking about, as you said, is summer enrichment programs, which in a sense have their own validity. Engagement of kids in cultural and social and athletic activities over the summer instead of leaving them out on their own with no guidance or access to activities is a positive thing in and of itself.
Right.
So in that case, I'm happy if there's reaching a lot of kids, and I don't necessarily need evidence that this kid is now doing X, Y, and Z specifically, because it might make sense just for the organization to say, if it's possible to collect it, that look how few of these kids actually get in trouble over the summer compared to the base rates at which kids, maybe that's a general sort of outcome. I guess the point I'm making is sometimes it's appropriate to ask for specific outcomes, and sometimes you can take these activities on face valid efforts.
I just want to add that because I've been attending the community coalition meetings, I've heard presentations from a number of these organizations, like the Midnight Basketball. So those kinds of presentations have made me, you know, very confident of the good work that's being done.
We don't have to know how many kids are going to get NBA contracts.
Right.
No. Okay, we're running out of time, so Tom.
I just want to make a comment. Like, while I think all of these things are important to understand the program itself, I think we shouldn't lose sight of what the Boys and Girls Club does and what the Community Coalition does has community impact. It goes beyond whatever it is that particular. And so not that I think that they need to go out and do surveys as a community, but we're trying to make this a healthy and a better community to live in, and these are some of the things that just have to be done in order to make that happen. So,
okay, Margaret.
I appreciate all of the enrichment opportunities for kids because, like Julian said, that's key. My only question would still go back to: are we funding some of these agencies already through grants? And is that a duplication, and then utilize the money to increase other things if we are? Thanks.
Moving on to the next application, also from the Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club, the Youth and Family Services, Margaret and Kyle.
The key to this program is parent peer support partners will come alongside parents and caregivers as they navigate the multiple systems in which their families are involved, and will help the parent caregiver in decision making, and also link the parent caregiver to community services and work collaboratively with all the services. And so it is system of care, the priorities, overarching priorities, underserved population, inclusion, and anti-stigma. The staff credentials were not included. A couple questions on it would be that we would be the sole provider of the services. And the focus on youth, it's interesting, the focus is on youth, the demographics of individuals served, there were 12 in 17, and that was for $160,000. And my concern is just the cost of that is $13,333 per individual, and that's more than school districts pay for a year for students. So the other thing is the FTE is 2.32, and there were for five clients listed. I think that was peer support. Sorry, I got all my notes here. I need to go back through. So also, I wondered what the link to the trauma, to our trauma grants would be within this. Thanks.
Did you say five clients? I thought it was 12. Mm-hmm. You say five clients served last year?
12.
Yeah, 12.
Yeah.
I thought you said...
Well, there's a five. I got to go back and find that note on it, but it might have been this year already served.
One of the questions I had, and it was also in the staff comments, was it don't believe it mentions a referral source. So I was just kind of curious about that. And, you know, is it schools, counselors? Like, where is that coming from? Mm-hmm. But that was pretty much it. I mean, I really like that it's got a heavy focus on the parents. Seems like a good program.
My only other comment is, even though I'm showing the fiscal data, that I think it is essential for us to think about how difficult it is for people to navigate systems. I mean, I think it's so difficult, and we look at all of us who have been in social services, we know how to do it because we've done that job. But as I look at other people or young families going through it or not knowing how to do that is key. And if you don't know how to do that, then you don't get the services. So I don't want to discount that.
Thanks. Other comments from board members?
I just want to say absolutely to what she just said.
Okay.
It's like so key.
Julian.
I guess I'm... Maybe in general, want to say for the I think that the these programs that the Boys Club is the Boys and Girls Club is administering are probably good things, and it would be nice if they could demonstrate it more clearly. And I'm wondering if it wouldn't be a good idea to recommend that they take advantage of the consulting for evaluation that we have set up a system, which I don't know. I assume they know that it's available. But I wouldn't mind giving them a little incentive to actually make use of it. I think they would benefit from that. And I don't think it would be all that hard with these programs to do. So just a suggestion.
I'd like to make a brief comment, and that is it would also be helpful. I know that this is intensive support, so it's not a midnight basketball game. It's very intensive support for 12 families or whatever. But it would be helpful to know if they have partnerships with other agencies that are also involved with benefit management, crisis and access. I'm thinking, you know, is there an overlap with some of the services provided by Rosecrans, or is there a partnership? Because we know that not everyone can be served by current agencies based on limited capacity, but to what extent are the various proposals that we're funding that involve navigating the service system, which is also case management, partnering or working together? That's a pretty big question, but I think one worth exploring. Thanks. Okay, we're moving on then to the Muhammad Area Youth Club with two proposals. The first one is Bulldogs Learning and Succeeding, Julian and Tom.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Thank you for waking me up here.
Yeah, those have been ongoing programs.
Yes, this is an ongoing program, and they're not asking for an increase at all. And we only give them $15,000. They've made some changes in the program, and this serves elementary age students in Muhammad. So one thing to notice is it's in Muhammad, which is, you know, there's not a lot of stuff that we're supporting that goes on in Muhammad. It's definitely in line with the kinds of with the category that we're in here. And they serve a lot of students. I think, what, how many? 370 last year?
So far this year.
So far this year, okay. So at any rate, there's a fair number of students in it. And what they want to do now is use the money that they get from the Mental Health Board. They've gotten some other support from the schools, actually, I believe. And so what they would like to use our money for is to provide scholarships to the kids. One of the things that was interesting to me is that it's pointed out in the application that most of us think of Muhammad as a fairly well-off bedroom community. I certainly tend to think that. And they're pointing out that 20 to 25% of the 3,000 kids come from low-income households. And the only thing that I would ask for that I don't know from this is, well, how much do they actually charge people to be in the program? And how many, if I followed this, there as many as 96 kids could qualify for this scholarship support. So how much does it cost for each kid? I assume there's a way that you arrive at the $15,000 number, that maybe that or maybe some other things besides that, I'm not sure. But basically what they want is to be able to take low-income kids into this program that apparently other people have to pay for. And it seems to me like it's a good idea.
Yes. I noticed that this is a collaboration with the Muhammad School District, so consequently, it limits who can actually be in the program while it serves low-income people. It's not countywide because you have to be in the Muhammad School. So my question is it possible to reach out beyond that limitation? Maybe it isn't. Maybe they have to limit it to those kids who are in Muhammad School. The other thing, I couldn't tell how many kids they serve because at one point on page 73, it says, so far this school year, 420 kids have participated. And then under residency, it says like 240 kids in the first two quarters. So I'm not sure which numbers they're actually making references.
This would come from all the reports that are submitted.
Sure.
So is it typo?
Well, no, it probably is actually a discrepancy. And we've seen that often, that the applications might use a number that's not in agreement with what's been reported. This might be total program or something.
Okay. Should we ask that question then?
Only if people think that it's relevant. Yeah, it's just, you know, does it need to be?
Into the third quarter.
I don't know if it has fiscal.
Start.
It might be doing with fiscal year or regular year. I have no idea, but. That's
well,
okay.
All of this information would be based on the first two quarters.
Yeah. Okay.
So July.
Ask them that. Okay. And I would also like to ask, is there any way to open it up to other?
Okay.
kids in the county. Maybe it's important, you can't do that.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, Lynn.
I forgot to mention this. The staff, I believe, were suggesting that it might be possible to actually get attendance records from school rather than to simply rely on parent surveys for attendance. Since one of their aims is to increase school attendance, it'd be nice to actually get the numbers. Since they're working with the schools, that shouldn't be very hard to get the actual attendance rate, what they really are. So it seems like a good suggestion from the staff.
Just a comment, we're funding a number of after-school programs that are community-specific. So Urbana has one, the Urbana Neighborhood Connections, Muhammad has one. Don Moyer's is, much of that is Champaign, not entirely. So we haven't asked them to expand beyond the schools in their district. Okay.
Maybe a distance issue.
Okay. Fair to ask the question. All right, moving on to the next one, which is Macy Members Matter. Judy and Joe.
They have asked for a $6,000 increase, and that is to add additional staff to their program. The Macy Matters is a junior high club that operates Monday through Friday from 3 to 5:30 on school days, supervised by two staff aides, which are funded by Macy. And they work on homework, social emotional support. This program collaborates very much with the school and other resources in the community. They also have a summer program, which I'm the liaison for that program, so I was able to go there, and I was just so impressed. They are open Monday through Friday from 7:30 to 6, which provides a lot of support for parents, particularly for
I remember when this program started. It was even going back to community collaboration. It did some work with Don Moyer's Boys and Girls Club. That's it started as an offshoot of that in Mahomet. And I did some volunteering with them as they started their program 23-plus years ago. Yeah, been, I was just a kid then. however, and one of the things that I still would like to see more of is cultural experiences for the participants in the program. And also thinking about stigma. The stigma in Mahomet isn't a black and white thing. It's a rich and poor thing. And I think finding ways in which they can hopefully work through some of those, because I know many of his young men and women from a trailer park and the apartments right next to the trailer park. So if we can find ways, they can find ways to make sure it's not just that discrepancy of saying those are those kids that we're helping rather than these are all our kids that we're working with.
I didn't get the feeling that that was a thought process with this, the director. The other thing I forgot to say, and they are starting a foundation to support this club in the future. They're in the beginning stages, but that is thinking ahead and providing for many youth in the future.
We're running over a little bit on some of the discussions. We still have four more proposals. And so hang in there, everyone, please. And thank you in the audience for hanging in there. The next one is Rosecrans, Parenting with Love and Limits. And Julian and Tom are the reviewers on that.
Well, let me say that you have all already reviewed this on multiple occasions over the last year. So I think everybody's quite familiar with the general outlines of the program, and maybe I shouldn't waste too much time recounting those general details. I do want to point out that, or just remind people, that this is now a combining of two programs that existed, one at Prairie Center and one at Rosecrans, with slightly different target groups, but it's now combined into one program, which is costing less than the two together had cost, even though the number is still not low. It's $392,000, almost $393,000. And this other thing that I need to say is that doesn't count. I don't believe that counts the money that we pay the Savannah Institute for their consultation. So to actually understand the cost of the program, you need to add that. I don't remember the exact number, but it's not small. It's smaller than it was, but it's okay, that's not included in this. That's the reason I'm pointing it out. Okay, I've never actually grasped why that's the case, but that's a technicality, just so we just should know it in thinking about this. This is, I think we discovered that a lot of people like this program. And, you know, it's a fairly well-documented set of things that they do. They did run into some bumps last year in kind of administering it and delivering what they had anticipated they would deliver. We'll see how that goes. In terms of the one thing maybe worth noticing is that who they served in terms of demographics was 68% men, 68% young men, and 36% African Americans, which isn't it is not an underrepresentation of African Americans in the community, which I was happy to see. I think maybe the beyond what everybody already knows, the thing that I think might be worth raising is less with, well, I'm not sure who to raise it with, but I'll raise it with you all. And it's, we have thought about this in various ways, that is, how to deal with a program that we think is good but costs a lot. And a lot of people in the community seem to like it. I mean, agency people and people with the, in the criminal justice system are asking for it, and people in the schools seem to like it, and so everybody likes it. How come nobody else is paying for it? I think that's a legitimate question, that if this is such an important community program, that we should see what can be done in order to have some leveraging here and expect that we don't support 100% of the program.
May we use that as a question to the agency?
We may. Yes, I mean, I think it would be a good question to the agency, since they're now a larger agency with statewide activities and lots of experience in this sort of thing. And I think it might be time to, that would be a way. Last year we decided we were making a mistake to just sort of stop doing it because it costs so much. But I do think it's legitimate to ask to share the costs in some fashion. So that's the main thing that I have to say about it at this point.
Okay, moving on to Tom then. We've got about a minute.
Well, I guess one thing that I do like about this program is that it supports people who are involved with criminal justice, which reminds me that we have talked about a number of programs here tonight that deals with people that are in the criminal justice system. And for these guys, three things that they say they do is to keep youth at home, keep them in the schools, and keep them out of trouble. Now, the question is, do they do that? Now, that's not hard to tell. Of all the kids that we've seen, are they at home? Are they in school? And are they out of trouble? And I'd like to know how that plays out. Because keeping kids away from the criminal justice system is a very, very important outcome.
So you're asking for data? Any other comments from board members? We have spent a lot of time on this program.
I know of the numbers served, well, 88 were served last year, 27 this year. And I just would like to know, when it's a number served, is it through the length, through the completion of the program? Is it through the initial interview? Is it one visit with them? So kind of categorize the services.
So you'd like to know the number of completers?
Yeah.
Okay. I think there's some number of meetings I have to go attend before they're counted.
We'll just clarify.
We have that.
We've been through that data.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so let's move on to Rosecrans Prevention Services, and that's Judy and Joe.
This is the program focused on substance use disorders, priority of system of care for children, youth, and families. The request of funding is $67,725. It's an increase of 16%. It focuses on 4th through through eighth grade students, but it is not limited to this age. Their curriculum is too good for drugs and too good for violence. They send
Prevention is it's an ongoing thing. It's never one-shot deals don't work for prevention, and I like the fact that it's an ongoing curriculum, and it's not something that stops, and it's a one-shot deal. So the 10-week program for drugs and the 7 weeks for violence makes it much more comprehensive, and so it can cycle it through the year.
Other comments by board members? Okay. Moving on then to the UP Center, Children, Youth, and Families Program. Joseph, you've got the lead on that, and
yeah.
Julian, secondary.
The UP Center is a place that provides services for LGBTQ youth. They're asking for 18-4. Less than 3% from what they asked for last year. The numbers are small, but I think one of the things that I would like to see is more outreach to this population, and also going back to the whole idea of stigma with this population also. How do you get people in? I know it's self-selective. However, I think there is a larger population of young men and women in this group that can be maybe targeted would be the wrong word, but at least brought into receiving their support that they need within this. Because gender expression and understanding the differences and at least self-acceptance would be one of those things that I think they do well, and getting that information out there. I would also like them to see if there could be more outreach to the schools, because I've not seen anywhere where they really get to the schools to talk about this. I don't have anything else, Julian.
I wasn't sure. They used to have do they still have a drop-in center? Do we know that?
It's a question.
It's a question. And they're really operating here on a shoestring. I never seen anybody ask for a little less money than they had before. But, So I wasn't sure from this exactly where they're located. Pardon? Thank you. Mm-hmm. So.
The campus YMCA.
Oh. I mean, I think that what they're doing is straightforward, reasonable. They don't claim to set out to change the world. They claim to be accessible to a target population that could use accessible things from places they trust.
Yes.
So to the extent that they've established themselves in that way, and they use, I think, you know, a lot of volunteer people involved in this. So anyway, I don't see any serious issues to raise. I was curious about whether they still have a drop-in center.
Mm-hmm. And how the drop-in center, is it open? What times are they open? And is there a staff or someone or volunteer available?
Comments from board members? Well, Urbana Neighborhood Connections Center, Community Study Center, thank you for waiting. You're the last group. Hello. And we have Margaret and Kyle to raise any concerns or questions.
So briefly, the Urbana Neighborhood Connections, the study center, offers after-school homework and tutoring sessions, and they also offer year-round academic, recreational, and social-emotional enrichment. I personally have worked with Janice, and they are like a model program. She's one of my heroes for working with kids. They've served 227 in 17, and just to give you an idea on the numbers, they have their own building. What they want to do this year, their measurements are engage the students in structured out-of-school time, education, social development, and recreational, and reduce or minimize criminal activities by youth in targeted areas, and to expose high school students to various college and career-related activities. They have actually, they're only asking for $19,500 at 227 kids. That's $85 a year for prevention. So you're really getting an unbelievable amount of time. And I know social workers from districts volunteer there. They have a lot of volunteer activities, so they utilize that. They work on grades for kids, and if you look at after-school programming, we know that after-school is the key time for kids unsupervised children to make bad choices. So it's a great time. It's a great thing to have after-school programming that can lead kids in a great direction. It's a very cost-effective prevention program.
I don't really have any questions, and she just stole all of my positive comments, so.
Could we add that they leverage well?
Yes, they do. And I'll be doing a presentation for you guys soon about college admissions and transfer.
Okay, any other comments from the board regarding the proposal?
I just have one comment, and I didn't know if it was when or if it's appropriate to bring it up. But one of the things I just was curious, and this is probably another life discussion, not here, but a number of the agencies charge for a lot of administrative things, and I want
not related to Urbana Neighborhood.
No, okay. Just in general, but of all of our grants. A lot of them will say this is for personnel and what their percentages are, and if we do look at that when we're giving out grants. So that's just I don't know if I said that right, but I know some agencies like charge, we pay for their HR person and things like that, and then you look at other agencies that leverage well. Thank you.
The next item on the agenda really is
announcements.
Announcements.
I'm sorry, I pulled that away from you.
Yeah. Do we have any board announcements? Kyle, and then Ann.
I just want to say I don't think any of us could pull off the shirt the way Joe pulls off that shirt. That's spectacular. Okay.
Well, we also have a dragon here.
Yes, I want to advertise the art show that was at Eberfest. That's where I got this. All right.
Butterflies, okay.
It's fancy shirt day.
Yeah.
I just want to say that I attended the Mental Health Board sponsored things at Eberfest this last week, and I don't know how many people were able to go to the panel discussion on Friday morning, but it was one of the best panel discussions that I have attended in a long, long time. So I just wanted to say that. I was very happy with that. Joe, what was the panel discussion on? He was on it.
I was on the panel, and part of what the panel discussion was using media or film in having conversations about communities of that are not recognized easily. It's a stigma. So, Daughters of the Dust was one that was used quite readily, 13, talking about how we as a society, one of the things that movies do, like if a movie like 13 would be shown at the Muhammad Era Youth Club, it would make a huge difference in how the perceptions could change. And those are things that they talked about. Julie Dash, who directed Daughters of the Dust, I think that's... was on the panel, and several other people who had done things that I was just there as the regular guy on the panel, because everybody else was a director or professor of something. It was a really good group.
Yeah, the discussion was really about stigma and discrimination, and how pervasive both of those things are in our society, and people gave personal examples that were quite moving. And I think there have been some pretty negative comments about our involvement with the Eberfest, that it's a elitist activity. And I don't agree with that statement at all, because I think that things like art and music and film reach people on a gut and heart level that counseling and any level, any amount of programs don't really do. And when you're talking about impacting people and reducing stigma and reducing discrimination, or labeling things at least the way they are so that people can deal with them, it's a very, very effective tool. And for me, it was very heartwarming to be with such a large group of people that were really thinking deeply about these issues that we're struggling with here.
I agree with that, Ann, except that if I'm in attendance, you're not to worry, it's not elitist.
Executive director comment.
Well, just that regarding the panel discussion, something really interesting happened during the comments. I think the discussion was really oddly compelling for 9 in the morning. It started off with a comment that was just, I thought this is the highest height you can hit, and you know, and this like amazing connection between two people whose lives were impacted by each other, and it was so cool. But then during the comments, two things happened that were notable in regard to whether those people are elites or not, the people from out of town who come here to do their festival. one of them was Chaz Ebert herself, and she talked about the looking back on some of the films and the stereotypes that she maybe didn't notice promoting before, and feeling like she was really starting to understand that, you know, now she's woke and she's really seeing it differently. So that was really amazing that even that she would say it more than, even more than she would think it. But the lady, do you remember the lady who asked you all if there was one really negative portrayal of mental illness in films that you would like to see go away forever? It was a great question. She's a film critic, and I know her because she has done our panel before. So I thought that was pretty cool that she would ask you all that.
It wasn't a movie that was shown this year, but the movie from last year about Shemik Holzklaw was, I mean, I use it at Parkland to talk to African-Americans about mental illness, because we don't want to talk about it. We don't want to address it. But this is also a super athlete who had a super diagnosis. And if we, it is the easiest way to broach the subject without feeling like I am preaching to you. I show it. Let's talk about it. When I show it in a class, you get a chance to. And I did not even know about the movie till Eberfest. So when I teach the class, I usually use part of it as part of my conversation in class.
That film came to be because Chaz Ebert financed it as a result of what she has learned through the festival. So,
any other board announcements? Then I move that we should adjourn.
Second.
Okay.
Bye,
thank you for two long meetings and full participation.